Welcome to episode 4 of the Promises of the Constitution podcast. In this episode, Pamela will discuss the differences between liberty and freedom. As we gain clarity between liberty and freedom, how can we implement the principles of freedom better in our own families, community, and as a nation?
Hello, this is Pamela Romney Openshaw, talking to you today about freedom versus liberty. Guess what? They are not the same thing. So we all want freedom. We hear about freedom all the time and everywhere. We all want to be able to make our own choices, to do the things that we want to do in our lives, to grow and progress the way we choose to do. We want to have that freedom to construct our own lives and make our own lives work the way we want. But freedom can very easily get out of control, and it can become license. And when it does, freedom is used to justify the destruction of our culture. When you have the freedom to do anything, the culture itself suffers, and ultimately it falls apart. Because freedom, just used any way you choose to use it, doesn't work. What we're really after is liberty. And liberty is freedom used wisely under Christian principles. That is such a key. If freedom is not combined with Christian principles and used with restraint, it destroys. But when freedom is combined with those Christian principles and it is used under the restraints of those principles, it enhances the culture and it gives all of us liberty. So the United States is a Christian nation. I've made that point before. In my book, Promises of the Constitution, I have an entire section about this, section 13. But I want to tell you just a few stories about our founders and give you some statements that tell you the historical background of America as a Christian nation. John Eliot in the 1600s was known as the Apostle to the Indians. He was one of the individuals who taught Christianity to the Indians and was instrumental in translating the Bible into the native Indian tongue so that those Indians could learn about Jesus Christ. Another one of the individuals that was very influential in early America was George Whitefield. He lived in the 1730s in England. A very interesting thing happened, however, under Jonathan Edwards, who was a pastor in Massachusetts. He taught a sermon one day, and something miraculous happened during that sermon. It was just like fire descending upon the people, the understanding of Christian principles. It was kind of a rebirth sort of situation. And so that movement quickly spread from his congregation back to England, where it infused and enlightened a group of three young men who were attending Oxford University there. One of those was George Whitefield. Another one of them was John Wesley. George Whitefield had a moment of conversion in his youth, a conversion to God, and made the decision that he would spend the rest of his life teaching people about God. So he began teaching in England and very quickly came to the Americas, and he taught for 33 years. In the American colonies, traveling from place to place, going to the back roads, going to the large cities, going to the smaller communities in between, teaching about Jesus Christ. He became so well known that people would come from miles around to hear him. In fact, one visitor recounted as in his journal, as he was approaching one of the major cities, he saw a huge cloud of dust on a road coming from an opposite direction, a huge cloud of dust, and he wondered, what is creating this cloud of dust? And when he arrived in the town, he discovered that dust was created by the people who were flocking into town so they could hear George Whitefield. Men would walk off and leave their plows in the field. Women would leave dinner cooking on the stove. Shopkeepers would shut up shop so they could come and listen to George Whitefield preach. The man was dynamic. He would preach for 2 to 3 hours at a time. Benjamin Franklin, who was his good friend, calculated that Whitefield's voice could be heard by 30,000 people at one time. The man must have had a loud voice. But this was representative of the kind of thing that he did. So he taught for 33 years in the American colonies, preaching his last sermon in Boston, 5 months after the Boston Massacre occurred. He then left and went north, where he preached one final sermon, and then he died. But Whitefield was instrumental in reawakening the people. In fact, this experience of Whitefield's teaching is referred to as the First Great Awakening in America. He turned the hearts of the people back to God. They'd kind of drifted away from that. You know, the Pilgrims and the Puritans brought that devotion to God, but the people had drifted away from it. Whitefield brought them back to that. And as he reunited them under a Christian faith, it helped to bring unity among the colonies, the unity that was going to be necessary for them to declare their freedom and become an independent nation. So that Christian individual preaching a message of Jesus Christ was partly responsible for us being able to carry out the Revolutionary War and become an independent nation. I tell that story in vignette 2.7 in my book, Promises of the Constitution. Listen, here are some statements from some of the leading founders of the nation back during the Revolutionary War period. This is Benjamin Rush, the father. We know him as the father of American medicine. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and he said, "The Constitution is the work of a divine providence." That's the name they used for God back then. "The only means of establishing and perpetuating our form of government is the Bible." This is John Adams, our second president of the United States, also a signer of the Declaration of Independence, who said, "The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity." And listen to George Washington. This is really dynamic. This was his address, his general orders to his troops on November the 27th of 1779. So we are now 5 years or 4 years into the Revolutionary War. Listen to what he's telling the troops. He says, "Whereas it becomes us humbly to approach the throne of Almighty God with gratitude and praise for the wonders which His goodness has wrought in conducting our forefathers to this Western world, and above all, that He hath diffused the glorious light of the gospel, whereby through the merits of our gracious Redeemer, we may become the heirs of His eternal glory." That is a Christian foundation. This was the greatest man during the colonial period. The great man concept was wrapped around George Washington, and he has declared unequivocally his belief in God. So liberty is possible only under Christian principles. But what are these Christian principles? Let's identify them. As you listen, think about how we have departed from these principles. The core Christian principle is a belief in God, a belief that there are principles above our own wants, above the things that we ourselves are so intimately involved in, a belief that there is a divine source who has answers, who can give us the truth. And also, because of that, our willingness to sacrifice to bring about the things that that divine being would have us do. Another is our belief in agency, our right to make choices. And connected to this Christian belief of agency is the concept of self-rule. When we are governing under Christian principles, we are always operating under the principle of self-rule, where the people can make their own decisions about government and establish their own policies and their own laws. But agency also refers to our right to speak when we choose to speak, to assemble, to associate with the people that we want to associate with, the right to vote. And it also means that we have the right to privacy. That's a natural human right. That is our right. And agency also refers to our right to ratify whatever form of government is produced for us, so that we add our seal of approval to that and our commitment that we will follow it. Another Christian principle is the principle of accountability. We have duties connected to these great blessings that we have in a Christian nation. We have the duty to become involved, to donate our time, our effort, and our attention to bringing about good things in our nation, not to walk away in apathy, not to leave it to somebody else, but to get involved and to donate our own time, our efforts, and our energies. And of course, that partly involves, but certainly is not limited to, our responsibility to vote, which means that we're going to vet the candidates, we're going to find out what they believe in, and we're going to place our vote in the most appropriate place. We also have the responsibility, under this Christian principle of accountability, to supervise those we put into office after they have taken office, so that we can take them out of office if they're not doing the things that we want them to do. And another part of accountability is the responsibility of our culture, of those who are in leadership positions in our country, to bring us accurate information. We see today such disfigurement of the facts in the media. That's a transgression of this principle of accountability. We are accountable, the media, those who dispense information are accountable to the people to give them accurate information. Another Christian principle is obedience. Obedience to God, obedience to the law, obedience to authorities who are doing what we ask them to do. And if they do not do what we ask them to do, we remove them from office. And we also, obedience also means that we are obedient to the principles of truth, that those are the highest priority in our lives. Another one of the great Christian principles that is badly misunderstood right now is equality. I discuss this in vignette 7.6 in my book, Promises of the Constitution, because this is one that is so badly misunderstood. Equality means not that everybody gets to do whatever they want to do, as is being interpreted in our society today, but equality means that we all deserve to have fairness in the courts and fairness in the justice received, that rank and privilege do not entitle individuals to more rights, more benefits, more goodies, and they are not also entitled to transgress the law. We're certainly seeing that happening in our culture today. That's a great transgression on this concept of equality. And the final Christian principle that I will mention, although there are many that could be mentioned, is the principle of hard work. We are responsible to earn our own way, to provide for ourselves, to provide for our own. That is a core Christian principle. So what's happening today? Because as you've listened to that list, you have hopefully identified that we are off track on a lot of those things. The thing that has happened is that we are replacing Christian principles with the principles of humanism. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on this because we'll be discussing it in future. And I also discuss it in my book. The entirety of section 13 deals with humanism and what it's doing to change our culture. But humanism is basically, and this is such an important concept, I mean, we've got to understand who the enemy is. We've got to understand who and what is destroying our freedoms. And it is this philosophy, termed a religion by its adherents, where man worships himself and his own wants and his own needs rather than worshiping God, where the self is the most important thing, and truth is relative to the individual, and there is no God, there is no accountability. We don't have to account to any divine being for what we've done. Therefore, if we can get away with it, we can really do anything. This is the philosophy that is replacing Christian principles. And under this philosophy, many of the great evils that we see going on in our world are being sheltered by this philosophy. Things like abortion, cohabitation before marriage, the dissolution of the family and the traditional family, fatherless children, pornography, the whole thing, the whole mishmash of self-gratification is all falling under this concept of humanism. When we are living under Christian principles, Self-gratification is not our goal. Our goal is to please the God who created us. And when we alter that as our foundation, we end up as a culture in serious trouble. So let me wrap up with this concept. Freedom is a necessary first step to us as individuals in order to secure our happiness and our prosperity. But that freedom must lead eventually and quickly to liberty, which is the wise use of that freedom under Christian principles and under Christian restraints. Thanks so much for being with us. Join us again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Promises of the Constitution podcast. Be sure to go to Pam's website, promisesoftheconstitution.com, to purchase her books, DVDs, and her online educational courses available to watch on any electronic device.